Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, February 28, 2023. We're in the Barnes Committee Room, Room 124 of the Alaska State Capitol Building, and let the record reflect that the time is 1:02 p.m. Today we have present Representative McKay, Representative Vance, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff assisting us today are Recording Secretary Kevin Allen, Moderator Zach Lawhorn, and Buddy Witt, my committee aide. Thank you for being here, gentlemen. Today, the committee will be given a presentation from Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Executive Director Randy Raro, with assistance from Deputy Director Brandon Brzezinski and External Affairs Director Josie Wilson, who are appearing via Teams, will give us an overview of ADA's mission and update on the committee on some of the items they are currently working on. First off, do any of the committee members have any questions or comments before we begin? Seeing none, Mr. Raro, welcome. Please place your names on the record and begin your presentation.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randy Raro, R-U-A-R-O. I'm the Executive Director for ADA. Thanks for having me here today. I'll walk the committee through the presentation and take a few minutes on each slide. If you have questions, feel free to ask.
Thanks, Mr. Raro, and I'd like to let the record reflect that Representative Stutz is present at 1:03 p.m.
Sure. So, Mr. Chair, starting on the first slide, ADA's mission, statutory mission provided for by the legislature, is in a nutshell to create economic growth and jobs, and that's designated as a public purpose by the legislature as well. And we are also designated as a subdivision of the state and a public entity. So what we do is, in fact, for the public residents of Alaska and has tremendous value. So 1967 was ADA's origination. We've been a financially self-sustaining corporation for years. We've provided nearly $500 million in dividends since 1996. And directed over $3.5 billion into economic development in Alaska. Our dividend for this year was roughly $17.9 million. As I mentioned, our dividends have been rising nearly $500 million since 1996, and that's increasing. And so our programs are performing well, Mr. Chair, and despite some negative statements from a certain entity, we think we can prove and rebut those and show that ADA is doing a good job, and that's our goal, and we're going to meet that statutory goal.
Thanks, Mr. Raro, and let the record reflect that Representative Johnson is present as of 1:04 p.m.
Mr. Chair, so one thing that I wanted to tie in for the legislators, committee members, is that our mission ties directly into the Statehood Act and the Constitution, Article 8, which says that we should develop Alaska's resources to the maximum extent possible. And one particular section of the Statehood Act, I think, ties into transportation issues and resource development that this committee should be aware of, and that's Section 6I. Just for background quickly, the U.S. Supreme Court says that statehood acts are not only federal statutes, they're also contracts or compacts that cannot be changed later by Congress, especially when it comes to land grants to states. And so I think it's important to remember that when our statehood act rights are interfered with or delayed, you know, there's a question, a legal question, whether the federal agencies even have the authority to do that. Let's see. So 6I, Mr. Chair, all land grants to the state shall include mineral deposits and the right to prospect for, mine, and remove the minerals. And that language is not an accident. That was put into the Statehood Act intentionally by Congress because they knew that Alaska was rich with minerals and would need a way to sustain itself. And so they granted not only the right to look for minerals on state lands, but to mine and remove those. And the removal language is particularly important. I would suggest that that says that the state has a floating easement whenever it's needed to get statehood minerals off of statehood lands. In other words, the federal government can't block us from developing our statehood lands. And if the chair is interested, I can provide some additional backup on that section and what it means, to the committee. Probably within the next week, I could give you a good rundown of the congressional history and the legislative history, because I think it's important. It's really easy to forget, you know, the Statehood Act was 1958. Can be easy to forget, you know, federal laws from that far ago, but our state fathers negotiated and got probably the best Statehood Act out of any state in the nation. So I think it's important to remember that.
Yeah, if you could, anything you could provide would be helpful. I'd appreciate that.
Sure.
Thanks.
Unfortunately, you know, the vision of Alaska.
Ferraro, hold on a second. I think Rep. Stutz has a question on the previous
Thank
slide.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Ferraro, the way you say that, it's coming across as if the state can just go in and mine anywhere they want to get any of their resources. And it makes it sound like we don't need to go through any kind of permitting process.
Through the chair, Rep. Stutz, I can clarify somewhat. I would say that when it comes to statehood lands, which are roughly one quarter or one fifth of the state, that as to those lands, the state does have a right to mine, prospect, and remove minerals. It may not mean that right isn't subject to any mitigating, you know, conditions or such that is discussed with the federal government. So, for example, the Army Corps of Engineers has jurisdiction over wetlands, which on statehood lands, I would say the Corps could come in and perform some sort of an environmental review, not a NEPA document, because NEPA says you have to have a no-build option in it. And so there is an opportunity, I think, for the federal government to weigh in with mitigating conditions, but I don't think they can just say no development.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I get that, but if there's permitting required, then the state must go through that process. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Rep. Stutz, I would suggest that it's a slightly different process than the usual permit process when it comes to state lands. I would say that the federal agency should be constrained by this promise to the state such that they can't simply outright deny the state the right to develop on state lands. On federal lands, I think the federal government has a lot more leeway. This language wouldn't apply. But on state lands, I think the state, you know, negotiated a promise from the federal government to be able to develop resources.
Thank you. That must have been the clarification that I was kind of looking for. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks. Moving onward, unless there's any other questions. Thanks, Mr. Raro.
Sure. So the state of vision hasn't played out well for a number of reasons, one of which is the federal permitting process, which under NEPA, if you apply NEPA to everything, it catches everything from green energy projects to, traditional oil and gas. And so that NEPA process is what this study is talking about, and it's still available online if folks want to read it. But that study here talks about how the NEPA process takes on average, I think, 5 to 7 years to complete, and then there's litigation often tied into it after that. So this study is all about how our federal permitting process, while well-intentioned, causes significant delay of opportunity, you know, for Americans and Alaskans. Back to Ada, Mr. Chair, we've got several transportation projects underway. We deal with everything from the FedEx hangar to the West Sioux project to the Ambler Access project, and the 1002 leases are on there. There will be an access. There's an access component, you know, to almost everything, just because of time and distance for shipping. The Ambler Access project is a priority project. It's a 211 mile road off the Dalton Highway into the Ambler Mining District. In this situation, or this project, Congress specifically said there should be a easement and access for that mining project. So when ANILCA passed in 1980, former Senator Stevens made sure to protect this opportunity. I think the mineral presence in the Ambler Mining District had been known for decades to be significant. And so he put language in the bill that provided for this easement right off the Dalton into the Ambler Mining District. Quite a few mining claims, quite a few jobs and wages available. We're working through some court issues. We've been litigated against by several groups, and you know, we'll just press forward through it and do the best we can, move it ahead as fast as we can. This is, again, a project that, because of ANILCA and because of the Statehood Act, our position is going to be that the federal government doesn't have the right to say no project. They can impose some conditions, reasonable, but they can't just say to the state, you don't have the right to develop on state lands. So that's a significant difference than most projects.
So how do the feds feel about that?
I'm not sure they agree with that.
So are they the holdup, or part of the holdup for the Ambler Road project, or is it other?
So the federal government, Mr. Boudreau, I think he's the Deputy Secretary of Interior, filed an affidavit with the court that said they had reviewed their previous process under the Trump administration, felt like they needed to study it more, and the court agreed that the BLM should be allowed to go and study several issues further and then issue a new decision. So we're in that process right now.
So maybe help me out a little bit. Is this, we're on federal lands, but there is an easement there, right? Mm-hmm. We're on several different entities' lands, but mostly it's federal. But there's already an easement granted to us via ANILCA, and now they want to study it more? Is that the...
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Yay. Okay, thanks.
That project, we did just reach an agreement with the BLM. ADA did. They're going to be moving forward with the study, we're going to be moving forward with a significant field season if we're allowed to do that. So some of the plaintiffs in the case have come forward and asserted to the court that the state is not in control of its own lands. They've asserted that the ANCSA corporations are not in control of their own lands. So that issue is before the court right now. Obviously, we disagree.
So maybe one more follow-up. What are they studying? What's the BLM studying?
Sure. So, Mr. Chair, the BLM is going to study subsistence issues, and they're going to study cultural historic sites along the easement route, and report back to the court and then issue a new decision. That decision on the timeline is due, I think, this fall, and it'll come out in draft. And so there'll be an opportunity for members of the public, this committee, others, to weigh in with a letter on that decision when it comes out.
Okay.
The FedEx hangar, that's been a real anchor project at the Ted Stevens International Airport. We're in negotiations with FedEx to make some additional improvements and increase the term of the lease by a significant number of years. And so we think the airport has been a great location for ADA. FedEx hangar's a key project out there, and we're going to keep them going for quite a bit longer, Mr. Chairman.
So I have a question on the hangar. So FedEx doesn't fly a 747 anymore. They do fly 777s, which have a longer wingspan. So is the 777 going to fit?
I believe it will. And they are also looking at some other expansion opportunities at the airport. So whether we're involved in those, we'd be happy to be, but we're still talking to them about those opportunities. PFAS in the presence in the ground is creating some issues. So we're trying to work through those, how to construct, you know, on ground that, that has PFAS contamination. So we're working through that.
Okay. Thanks.
The West Sioux Access Project, very first part of that road, I think, was built back in 2013 or 2012 by DNR. I think it made it 7 to 8 miles in. This would extend that road another 92, 95 miles long, cross over the Susitna River. Really significant recreational values in that area for Alaskans, as well as mineral, pretty highly mineralized area up towards Skwetna and beyond. So that project is before the Army Corps of Engineers. We just submitted four pages of a, we were handed a list of 4 pages of information that the Corps wanted. We've submitted that information and we're trying to move forward on that as quickly as we can.
So that has to do, was that to do with the wetlands?
Correct.
And there's only, as I understand it, only about 1% of the whole thing is wetlands.
That's correct. It's not thousands and thousands of acres. It's a fairly small amount. That's a priority project. Deputy Commissioner Brzezinski's the lead on that. And if he's on, Mr. Chair, he may want to speak to the project a little.
So, Mr. Brzezinski, you want to talk to us a little bit about the West Susitna Access?
Sure thing, Mr. Chairman. Can you all hear me?
Yep.
All right. For the record, Brandon Brzezinski, Deputy Director at ADA. So as Randy was saying, we have submitted about 4 pages worth of requested materials to the Corps of Engineers for our application, so we can now start the process to procure a third-party contractor to begin the environmental impact statement. That is about a 2-year timeline, or what we're estimating. But going through that process, it's required, right? There'll be other permitting processes that occur at the same time. But the hopes would be then to start the project, second quarter of 2025. But, if we go to this slide here, what is the purpose of this project? Why is this a priority for the, administration, and ADA? There's tremendous, recreational activity out there. There's tremendous mineral potential out there. There's also opportunities for agriculture, forestry, and there's some oil and gas reserves out there. And DNR, in fact, as a matter of a couple weeks ago, put out a public notice for exploration licenses in the area that would be to like the north and the south of the road. So next slide, please. So, as we know, mining is important for Alaska's economy. It's important statewide. It mines anchor communities. It's also important on a national level as technology is moving more towards the need for critical minerals in all of our devices. And out there in the West Susitna area where the road would terminate, there's several mine deposits out there that contain these elements that we need for everyday modern life. Next slide, please.
Mr. Brzezinski, could you in the very title of this slide, it says transitional economy. So maybe you could flesh out what exactly that means. I've heard that term recently a lot, and also the whole gap economy. So maybe you could flesh those out for those that are online and exactly what it means for us.
So I'm gonna kick that one over to Josie Wilson, who's online here, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Sure. Ms. Wilson, just
for the record, this is Josie Wilson, Communications and External Affairs Director for ADA. Thank you for the privilege to address your question, Chairman. So one of the terms that we're hearing a lot is transitioning from a traditional resource to an alternative energy economy. One thing to be aware of that people are unaware of is that we need minerals in order to have what some people call a green economy, or to have alternative fuels, electric vehicles. Most people are unaware that to have a transitional economy or a green economy or alternative energy economy, we need critical minerals to enable that to happen. So, Chairman, does that answer your question and help to bridge the gap that maybe some people are unaware of?
Sure, Ms. Wilson. So I assume you mean that, like, solar panels need a certain amount of copper, the windings and the generators and the wind turbines on Fire Island are copper, and, of course, we need steel, and steel's made out of coal and iron ore, so we need all those mining stuff. And so, you know, these two words here, transitional economy, I think that people need to understand that we are going to have mines and mining and oil, frankly. I mean, battery cases are made out of plastic, which comes from petroleum. We're going to have all of that for a long time. And so if we have a chance to do it in Alaska, mm-hmm. from the west to Sitna Access, knowing that Alaskans do this better than anybody else on the planet, develop our resources, I think maybe that's one of the pushes for this road.
Chairman, you couldn't have said it better. I wish I had written that down. That was beautiful, and you exactly nailed it. In addition to what I know Brandon and Randy will talk a little bit about, too, is the importance of these critical minerals for other purposes in addition to transition into this green economy and these items. You absolutely worded it perfectly.
Well, gee, thanks. Moving on.
Sure, Mr. Chair. Just one other point on the benefits of the road. We're going to look and work with Fish and Game and to see if there's opportunities to improve rivers or streams. We're going to try to make it a better place for producing salmon and for Alaskans, not have a negative impact. So the hope is at the end of the day that there's more salmon, more fish, more opportunity for everyone. So that's a goal we're going to work on there.
So I was just going to say before she raised her hand that I bet Representative Vance has a question about mm-hmm. that.
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit on the engineering slide. But since you mentioned, the fish, on the 171 culvert crossings, do you happen to know if those will be fish-friendly culverts?
Through the chair, Representative Vance, they will be fish-friendly culverts, I think, designed in partnership with Fish and Game.
Wonderful. Thank you. That's all for now.
So I kind of have a follow-up on that, if that's okay. So I've heard many concerns from Cook Inlet fishermen as well as the sport fishermen in the valley about the Susitna River bridge. So this is kind of the first opportunity we've had to flesh out West Susitna Access, but I assume there will be public hearings, public discussion, that there will be all sorts of things given to the public so that they can understand where that bridge has to go and how you're going to construct it to protect our salmon and, that whole thing. I think that's the pivot point, I think, or the big inflection point for this whole project is that bridge, if I'm not mistaken.
To the chair, it will be a significant part of the project for sure, and there will be multiple opportunities for comment and review of the bridge design and placement, all of that.
Thanks.
Sure. Brandon, you want to talk about this slide, please?
Yeah, so moving on to the next slide. So we talked about the importance of mining for the transitional economy of the country and the state. But, this is specific to the importance of this road project to the economy of local residents around the Matsu Borough, South Central region of the state. And this is an excerpt from this the McKinley research report that we'll be releasing soon, where they estimated the potential job impact and payroll impacts of these four mine deposits listed here, where the road would provide access to. these are the potential jobs, not just operating jobs, but the net, the total jobs, like the indirect jobs associated with those jobs, as well as the wages for any one of these projects. And you can see it would be a substantial boom for the South Central region if these projects could come online. So next slide, please. So as we already touched on this just a little while ago on the engineering, but yes, the project will be designed in a way that meets like fish standards, fish culverts. It contains several bridge crossings. We're planning on having identified areas for boat launches, you know, pullouts for trails, et cetera. So
Mr. Brzezinski, one of the things that my constituents have tasked me with respect to this road, everybody's very interested in it. They're not interested in it unless they get to drive on it whenever and wherever they want with their four-wheelers and their 8-foot-wide snowmobile trailers and hauling their moose hanging off the sides of their truck. So that's going to be very important to all of us legislators, I think, is public access on this road.
Chairman, this road will be public access.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Next slide, please. Now I'm going to kick this over to Director Raro, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Sure. So, Mr. Chair, committee members, I added this slide because it shows that in addition to our route, there's a number of other existing, I think, at least five different RS-2477s that provide public access for the public based on a federal grant of an easement under an old 1867 mining law. And so these are all additional access opportunities into that area. I just thought it was important to note, you know, besides our route, there are a number of other routes.
Thanks, Mr. Raro, and just let the record show that Representative Mina showed up at 1:25. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Randy, what's RS-2477? Is it just the roads? Is that what they call them?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, and RS-2477 is a generic term for a type of easement that the federal government gave out in the 1880s, 1870s, I think. And they said what the statute said until it was repealed in 1976 was anywhere there was public use of open public lands, an easement was created. And so in this land area, we've got at least five RS-2477 easements that could sustain public use that are actually codified in the Alaska statutes. There's, I think, 932 of them total statewide that have been identified. But these, if you were to walk on any of these routes, you would have a right of public access to use them.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks. Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. So I'm going to ask the obvious, not so obvious question. Since there are these other easements, why create a new one that's kind of running parallel to one that is already providing access?
So through the chair, Representative Vance, the question boils down to what is the most buildable route, and then what is the route that one of the RS-2477s is the Iditarod Trail. And so we're trying to make some effort to leave some distance, you know, between the road and the trail based on its historic use. So there is a number of factors that come into play when we separate or segregate, you know, our road from the RS-2477. In other places, we're actually pretty close.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
So for the record, Brandon Brzezinski, Deputy Director, as I said earlier in the presentation here, the permitting is currently underway. You know, we have submitted a significant amount of information to the U.S. Corps of Engineers for them. They've received it. They've acknowledged that. We are now starting the process for acquiring a third-party contractor to begin our EIS. We have our state right-of-way. You know, there will be other permits necessary as we're going through this, you know, 404 analysis, Section 106 cultural survey analysis. So, but it is underway. We are moving forward. And if you go to the next slide, there's a project timeline where you can see we intend to begin construction, you know, if all things go well, by 2025. So, and with that, if you go to the next slide, I'm going to ask Ms. Josie Wilson to take this as our external affairs director.
Thank you. This is, for the record, this is Josie Wilson, external affairs at ADA. One thing that we are requesting your support on and would love to get any ideas that you have is there are misconceptions in some of your, you've identified some of your constituents maybe don't know. So we definitely need to hear when there is an opportunity to correct and make sure people are aware. We have two opportunities coming up here in March of community meetings that we're planning to both in the Mat-Su Valley and in the project area to try and provide this information. So thank you for the opportunity to present today on this. Thank you for your help. We are asking and requesting everyone that is supportive of this project to be advocates for responsible development of Alaska resources, as Randy mentioned earlier. And we have an Alaskans for Access coalition that is trying to inform constituents and the public around the truth of this project and others. There is a group called Friends of West Susitna that is trying to provide facts and information that we're encouraging the public and any constituents to join. And of course, during the formal EIS process, the environmental impact statement process that will be conducted by the Corps of Engineers as part of this permitting effort that's underway, there is opportunities to comment during that process, specifically around scoping and when the draft environmental impact statement is available, the draft EIS and then the final EIS, which is part of that NEPA process. So we're encouraging everyone to have their voice be heard and to continue to communicate with us at ADA if there are questions or concerns or you're hearing misinformation coming out in different sources. We certainly want to make sure that everyone has the facts and the truth.
So, Ms. Wilson, is there a website that people can follow the project along in the different phases? I assume that it may migrate off of ADA site if you have one now to wherever, but is there a place other than Friends of West Susitna or the Friends of West Susitna? Do you have a website that describes the project and all that sort of thing?
Right now we have a designated section on the ADA website that we can provide to you to follow up so you can keep staying in the loop. Right now it is up to date with information and we can provide that to you, and we are working on doing kind of a shortened URL to make it easier for people to go right there. Right now our plan is to direct everybody to the ADA website page where all this information is kept up to date, but we do have a Facebook page that is now accessible and available because we're finding people get a lot of information through social media. So we're not creating at this time a separate project website directing people to the West Susitna Access Project page on the ADA website that's kept up to date and providing a social media location for that. Chairman, is that sufficient from your understanding, or would you advise or suggest kind of an outside website as well?
No, thanks, Ms. Wilson. I think that's fine. Just wanted to make sure that people knew that there was a place they could go for transparency and to keep an eye on the project. There's lots of interest, both sides, of course, but you know, we need to. You know, part of our job is to make sure the public knows and understands what's going on there, and so I appreciate that. Mr. Raro, can we go back, or maybe Mr. Brzezinski, to slide 14? I know what Estelle is because I've actually been there, but as far as Whistler, Island Mountain, Raintree West, and Canyon Creek, can you flesh those out a little bit, what exactly they are? Which mineral they're going after and that sort of thing, and maybe even where they are a little bit. I know there's One of them's kind of at the top of the north end of Mount Susitna, if I'm not mistaken.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Brzezinski, do you have a map or ability to describe where some of these deposits are?
So we can provide a map to the committee if it's not included on here, but I could speak to, so the Whistler project, is the leases are owned by a company called Gold Mining Inc. And these are potential gold and copper, deposits, the Island Mountain, again, Gold Mining Inc. And that is a gold and copper deposit. Canyon Creek is the Alaska Asia Mining Company. That is a coal, or as they like to say, carbon ore project. And that project, I believe, is to the south of the road. But I'll provide a map. We'll follow up where these projects are exactly located as they go along the road project, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that'd be great. Anyone else have any questions? Well, that was easy. So seeing none, Mr. Raro and Mr. Brzezinski and Ms. Wilson, I appreciate your help, and I appreciate the presentation, and we'll certainly be keeping an eye on this exciting, one way or the other, development as it goes forward. For the committee, our next meeting will be Thursday, March 2nd, where we will be given an introduction and begin committee work on House Bill 81, which is an act relating to the transfer of a title on the death of the owner. So seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:38 p.m.